Welcome into the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat Podcast presented by Inquirer Sports. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers, Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out the insider news as well as listening on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Just search Inquirer Bengals Beat Podcast. And as always, you can listen on our free Cincinnati Inquirer Bengals app. If you don't have the app, well, I suggest rectifying that situation immediately in the App Store. Now, if you're down with BBP, let's go. All right, welcome into the BBP. Paul Diener Jr., Jim Ossarski, your Bengals beat writers at Cincinnati.com, Cincinnati Inquirer, we're back at you. And guess what, folks? We in the booth. We are officially in the 312 Elm podcast booth. So I hope we're coming to you crystal clear. You're getting the full vocal cords of the two of us, because this is our first time we've both sat in the booth.
Yeah. Yeah.
We like to be mobile.
It was a good thing we showered.
Yeah, it's tight.
Yeah.
And it's dark. It's dark. It's a shame we really can't get video. Maybe we'll do a selfie at the end of this. People can really get the true visual of how we're rolling.
Can this be a scratch and sniff podcast? Do we want that?
Scratch and sniff.
how tight this booth really is by the end of this thing.
I don't want to
fully interactive.
I don't want to scratch or sniff anything. That's going to be my rule. That's what we're going to start with. We're coming with you. Still in the middle of OTAs going on with the Bengals. Shout out again to you, Jim, for picking up the reins last week with another bootleg BBP.
Yeah, no problem.
I think while you were recording the BBP, I was unconscious with my back open.
Yeah.
Getting surgery. I had back surgery last week. So, folks, I mean, I'm on the DL. I'm on the DL. Thank goodness Jim's been here to pick up. So if you're wondering, like, does Paul still work? Does he still have a computer where he can type? Because I have not seen many stories. Just because, I've been out pretty good. So I'm recovering from back surgery right now. And lucky for you, you get a little doped up. You get me a little doped up today. I'm still on some pain pills. So if I say anything that's a little outlandish, I completely have out. I have an out. No liability here. Is that cool?
Cool with me.
So I swear I'm not really that loopy. I'm hanging. I'm only on one pill right now. Just to keep the back pain down, all right? Don't go getting crazy. All right, we're going to get some stuff to you today. Let's I obviously haven't been able to make it down to OTAs this week. But there is something I think a lot of people are really interested in, not just locally but nationally, with this team, this Joe Mixon. And one thing we haven't really talked about, we talked about everything else with Joe Mixon, right?
Yeah.
But let's talk about football. Now, this is football in shorts.
Yeah.
This is hardly what you would even call being able to really judge somebody. But from what we're seeing, Joe Mixon observations, give me a word. Joe Mixon is what?
Fast.
Fast.
Look, again, football in shorts, so what can you see? It's speed, right? And he's not getting they're trying to split up the reps and where it's all the same. But, he's running third team behind Jeremy Hill and Sed Pierman. But the level of speed is really noticeable, Paul. Like when his burst, I understand it's no hitting, but it's fat. Like there was one play a couple weeks ago, Paul, where Clayton Fedulum almost took his head off because it was such a fast cut and turn upfield that Fedulum's instincts kind of just kicked in and he just reached out and grabbed him around the neck. I've heard some stuff from coaches in the sessions we can't see that are kind of blowing their mind a little bit. And in the last open session of OTA the other day, Even Chris Collinsworth, you know, former Bengals receiver, NBC color analyst, Pro Football Focus owner, was just kind of like, wow, you know, there's that factor there. So, yeah, one word. There's a lot of words to get back to one word fast.
Yeah, PFF graded him out as pretty much the best running back in college football when you looked at their overall grades and stats, stuff like that last year. And you know, I mean, this is no secret. You don't take on this hit if you aren't feeling like you're getting a payoff on the other end for what this guy is, and that's what they're getting. So I mean, you want him to show up and be that. His weight was up, right? I mean, so he's down now.
Yeah, well, it was funny because after the rookie camp, it was the one thing Marvin said about him was, "Yeah, when he gets back into football shape, he'll look different." And basically, what it was is he came in almost 240 pounds, basically because he was a guy who was on a plane a bunch, visiting 20 teams, eating a lot of, you know, crap, a lot of dinners over interviews.
Yeah.
So we'll hear from Joe in a little bit, but he says he's down to playing weight, so he's lost 10 pounds or so in the last month. And again, definitely looks at Carl Lawson's speed, you see Jordan Willis's speed, you see. And Joe Mixon's speed, you definitely see.
Yeah, and you haven't even seen John Ross yet,
right?
So let's do you guys. You know, you talked to Joe Mixon a little bit after the last OTAs. That was the last of the OTAs. This week, next week is the 3 days of mandatory mini camp. The only mandatory thing of the entire offseason, basically, will happen next week: Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and then they're off until training camp. So we're getting to the end of this sort of portion of the program. But you talked to Joe Mixon, so let's give you a little bit of Joe Mixon, and then we'll come back and we'll delve into a different topic with him.
I know early, I think it was the mini camp, the rookie camp, you were encouraged by the playbook. You're like, a lot of similar stuff to Oklahoma. Now that you're in practice with coaches and the vets, has it stayed kind of that easy? Have you felt yourself picking it up as fast as you thought you would be in the rookie camp?
Yeah, definitely. And another thing is about, you know, me getting my weight down and being in shape. Once I was able to get playing speed and my weight down, I started feeling a lot better, moving better, and things like that. But everything's starting to slow down a lot for me, so I've been going good with the ones.
Yeah, Coach Lewis mentioned that. He said after the rookie, he's like, he looks like a guy who had to visit 20 teams or so before. So what were you at, and what are you at now, I guess? Are you weight-wise? Or he mentioned after the rookie camp that, like, he's like, oh, he'll look faster once we get to the OTA. So what were you at, I guess, weight-wise at the start, and what are you at now?
I think rookie minicamp, I was, like, about 238.
Okay.
And now I'm about, like, 228.
Yeah. So it feels a little better.
Yeah, so. I'll never be that heavy again.
Right.
Never.
And that was just because you were having to train for stuff and also fly around and meet people.
It was mainly fly around and eating super good. So
right.
That's what it was.
Right. And just finally, what is, again, kind of the adjustment? Because I know for every guy in this room, you guys have been recruited, come in to be, you know, a starter, a player who's drafted, and then they come in, and now there's Jeremy, there's Seth, there's kind of like that. What has that been like to be part of that rotation again? You know what I mean? It's not like you're just coming in and they're just giving you the rock. You're the guy. You know what I mean? Like, you've had to, I'd imagine it's been a while since you've had to work in, I imagine.
Well, I mean, too, at the end of the day, is we all go out there and compete. At the end of the day, I got something to prove, so I'm going out there each and every day doing whatever I could to, you know, separate myself. But at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, I'm sure they'll go with whoever they feel is ready.
So there's Joe Mixon. And so I really, the one thing that everybody wants to know, especially the fantasy players, all fantasy, everyone's got a prediction on Joe Mixon.
Yeah.
You know, and let's dive into this topic. We were talking about this before we started the podcast, and I said, have we really gone in on how is this going to play out? And I don't think we really have enough yet. How is Joe Mixon, Jeremy Hill, and Giovanni Bernard going to end up playing out as we look at it now? Let's start here. End of the season. We look back at the stat, the season-long box score. Who has the most yards? Who has the most carries?
Wow. end of the year. We're going to do this giant prediction page, stat cast.
Oh, man. That's the first. The prediction page from hell. Where we tried to predict every stat.
Yeah.
That was a lot of math.
Wow.
No, just these three. I mean, I think it's a really hard question.
Yeah, I think. Wow. Just. I'm stuck here, Paul.
Yeah.
I know how I think the season's going to start, how it's going to end. I think it'll be.
Assuming health.
I think it'll be Joe Mixon in yards, Jeremy Hill in carries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't. I think. I think Jeremy Hill will quickly be phased out into more of a goal line, short yardage, maybe type of guy. And I just think they're going to give Joe Mixon opportunities. I think Joe Mixon will show really well in the preseason.
Yeah.
And I keep going back to this. We're sitting at the combine talking to Ken Zampezi. And we were talking, you know, and everybody had been sort of discussing Jeremy Hill and trying to be pretty positive with him. And when we talked about him with Ken Zampezi, he said, when someone was trying to make an excuse about injury or something else, have we seen what he is? He says, well, Ken basically said, we saw the last 2 years, he was healthy, whatever he was the last 2 years, we've seen the same guy.
Right.
That, to me, was someone who was sort of like kind of maybe a bit done with this.
Yeah.
Like waiting for Jeremy Hill to be a guy he was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
2014, by the way, a long time ago.
Yeah.
I mean, you weren't here.
Nope. No.
And, I mean, we're just – that was a long time ago. And to continue to try to reach and – pull this out of this guy from 3 years ago after they gave him every opportunity and then saw what Rex Burkhead did
right
at the end of last year. I just feel like I feel like they've worn pretty thin, and you take that compared to what I think will be a pretty nice little preseason, and obviously they know what Mixon can be.
Right.
And they're going to want to get him out there to kind of change the conversation as well.
Right.
I think he gets in there early, and I think once he gets in, he makes an impact.
I won't disagree with the last part of that, Paul. I'm going to go back to what you said when we've made, like, playoff predictions. You're like, I'll believe it when I see it. Yeah. So I'm not buying into the Jeremy Hill is a new guy thing, because that was kind of the storyline last year. And Jeremy Hill had a really good camp last year, and he had a decent preseason last year. Right, and then the real game started, and all of a sudden it was back to what we saw in 15.
Yeah,
where I'm going to start with this, Paul, is a couple things. I'm going to go with what I know, and what I know is Marvin Lewis is still the head coach. Marvin Lewis thinks Jeremy Hill still has something in him. Marvin Lewis likes that Jeremy Hill's in a contract year. I think that, and Jeremy Hill's been here 4 years. So I think that Jeremy Hill is going to start the season. He's going to get those first carries. I think Joe Mixon is going to be the third down guy. I was watching Gio Bernard on the side field, and Gio's cutting already.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe technically Gio could be ready to go week one if they, like, had to. I think they'll slow play that just to really make sure. I haven't been told this by anyone. This is my opinion. I think, Paul, it'll be Jeremy's show early. He gets – whenever they decide Gio needs to come back, right, week two, week three, that's Jeremy's time. Show it.
Yeah.
You've got this. You need to do it in week one or week two because Joe Mixon's playing on third down. So there's a part of me, Paul, that's like I want to say contract year. Can Jeremy – be good? I don't know, because you're right. I haven't seen him do it other than score touchdowns in the red zone. So I think that's why I say Joe Mixon will have more yards, because I think we'll see explosive plays out of Joe. But I can see Jeremy, like Marvin, feeding him the ball at least those first few weeks. And then I guess there's a part of me that thinks he'll be effective enough to continue to get carries. Yeah. Even when Gio comes, which is a whole other conversation. Now, what do you do with three guys?
You know,
but at least early, that's what I mean.
And I've felt in the last couple times that they have inserted new running backs that they have been slow to figure it out as a staff. I thought in Giovanni Bernard's rookie year, they were slow to figure out how to use him with Ben Jarvis Green Ellis,
right,
where everyone says he should be your third down back and you should be using him out of the backfield that way and throwing the ball to him more. And it took him a long time to do that.
And that was Jay Gruden, right?
That was Jay Gruden. And then they had Hugh when you had Jeremy Hill's first year at OC. And if not for Giovanni getting hurt, we really wouldn't have hardly have seen Jeremy Hill in the outburst that he became. Everybody kept wondering, when are they going to get Jeremy Hill involved?
Right.
And it took longer than you thought it should. And now you're going to have, now you have a third coordinator. And we have a common thread here. As you say, what do I know? I know Marvin Lewis is still the coach.
Right.
It just seems like, and this contradicts my point from earlier, but the one thing that does hold me back is are they going to repeat where they just seem to be slow to the trigger to figure out how these guys with skill sets work?
Right.
But yet, what have we heard from Marvin Lewis? We've heard from him, hey, we as offensive staff need to figure out ways to make guys make plays that they made in college earlier on to make them comfortable.
Right.
We've heard him say that before. And that's going to be part of Joe Mixon as well, which is he's giving the ball.
Right.
So is it some packages or whatever? I don't know, but I am putting more weight on the thread coming apart a little bit on how they feel about Jeremy Hill than I am on what's been some past history. I think we'll see which one plays out more. It's going to be really interesting to see those go against each other just because there's going to be so much attention on Mixon.
Yeah.
And you know they know what he can be. They believe he's a top 10 pick.
Right.
This is the equivalent of our conversation we had about don't draft a guy in the top 10 and not play him.
Right.
This is the same thing because they believe they have a top 10 guy in Joe Mixon.
Right. And an X factor there, Paul, too, could be the fact that this is Marvin Lewis, as I've never seen him as what since 2010, since you've ever seen him, right?
Yes.
As a coach,
since the worst press conference in history,
a coach that doesn't have a deal for next year. So how short is the leash for a Jeremy Hill? Because look, if Gio's ready to go, but they want to give him another week or two to practice fully, and Jeremy gets 16 carries for 36 yards in week one, you know, okay, that was it.
Yeah.
You know, and now you are what you are. I don't know. I mean, because that's the kind of the X factor of Marvin and Ken kind of being in a spot where neither of them could be working in 2018 if this doesn't go right.
And let's, you know.
I should say.
Exactly. And let's just say this. I mean, you're talking about, okay, give him a few weeks to give Jeremy a chance. Well, what if you just blew a chance to beat the Ravens?
Right.
At home.
Yeah, that
you can't blow those chances. You need to put out there the best that you have. Period. I mean, that's a huge game.
Joe's going to play week one.
But how much? But you're talking about giving Jeremy Hill 16 to 20 carries? And if Gio's healthy, not putting that guy out there, the guy you did give an extension to, if you believe he's healthy?
Yeah, that's a tough one. Who
worked all offseason
right.
to get back and not let him go get his shot to be the guy, a guy that you probably trust more than any of them.
Right. Bernard's – that whole thing's fascinating. Look, and the reason you haven't heard from Gio this entire offseason is because he doesn't want to be heard from. Off camera, off mic, I mean, basically Gio says, I'm not talking about anything until I'm ready to play football.
Yeah.
So Gio is going to be like a ghost. You know, you'll hear about him out on the field. But until he's actually participating in practice, he's not going to talk, which leads to speculation. But again, Gio is running around and doing stuff. I just think with an ACL that was torn 6 months ago, 8 months ago?
November. Yeah,
And then you factor in the whole, like, Marvin wants a guy to practice before he plays. I just have a hard time feeling like they're going to put Gio in preseason games? Why?
To test him. I mean, they would want to see how he is. If he's out there practicing and they want to see that he can go, and even if it's just a couple of series to get him, you don't want to just send him out there week one. And we're speculating a lot.
Yeah.
We don't know whether he's going to be in camp.
Exactly. So that's why as of now, and I'm leaving myself that wiggle room to change this as we go, but as of now, I'm always going to say Gio isn't going to be ready for week one because it's less than a year from an ACL for a guy.
ACLs come back
that
so much earlier now, and yeah, and according to, you know, it sounds like his rehab has gone really well.
Yeah.
I think that you talk about week one against the Ravens, a big game at home. That's a trust game. Who do you trust out there, right?
Right.
They trust him. I mean,
Marvin trusts Jeremy Hill over a rookie.
Does he? Yeah, probably.
I think Marvin does.
Yeah.
I mean, that could change maybe.
Or does he trust his eyes if he sees Joe Mixon run for 5.6 a carry in preseason?
Oh, what? Well, yeah.
For whatever that
preseason
means.
Right.
But he knows what he is.
Certainly, if Joe Mixon's running for 5.6 yards per carry, I think everybody's doing cartwheels because that means somehow that offensive line looks real good.
Yeah.
Which is a whole other thing. That's going to be, like, this whole – it's all connected, but it's all fascinating in a way, Paul.
It is.
Because, like, if you're right, let's just say week one, all three are healthy. And they're ready to go. Jeremy, I think it's the same as what we've seen. Jeremy Hill starts. Gio Bernard's the first one in on the rotation. And Joe Mixon is somehow a sub-package because, oh my God, last year Ryan Hewitt only played 8 snaps against the Jets, and it was like Ken Zampezi has said all offseason, I messed up and didn't get Ryan Hewitt in. Well, if Ryan Hewitt's playing and Tyler Eifert's healthy, oh, you can only run out 11 guys.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where, honestly, Paul, it's the way this works with Marvin Lewis is the rookies don't play. So until I see otherwise, Joe Mixon's only going to get like 5 carries week one or 5 touches.
Yeah.
If they're all healthy.
We've seen some guys on offense play, but typically it's because spots are gaping, whether it was Kevin Zeitler or Jermaine Gresham. Even Tyler Eifert was weaned in. He wasn't brought on to come and be the man because Gresham was there, and God knows this team had problems with Jermaine Gresham when they drafted Tyler Eifert.
Right.
I just, you know, and this is me speaking. This is as if I was the coach. I'm not going to sit there and watch Jeremy Hill gain 2.6 yards per carry for another year when I just put my butt on the line and I just became a laughingstock of the league and you know, and people are throwing darts at me.
Right.
Because I drafted this guy, Joe Mixon. Well, go show why you drafted him and why you were willing to take those hits and let him go win you a damn game. That's my opinion. And that's the other side of this. And I don't think PR or outside opinion will play into how they decide to go about getting Joe Mixon into the lineup. But it's certainly part of a grander equation when you're trying to figure out what's the best way. The best way to handle Joe Mixon is to have people watch him play football and start to have that be his story and not that other video be his story, a.k.a. the Tyreek Hill equation.
Right.
And that's, guess what? After he runs for a bunch of long touchdowns, the fans with their cheetah speed signs are jumping up and down and screaming for him.
Yeah.
That's part of it, too, is starting to change the narrative on that and helping him move past that.
I agree with you in so many ways, but – again, Marvin's the head coach. And even the preseason, Paul, like, look, do you really want – let's say Gio isn't ready for preseason games, so Jeremy Hill gets a few carries. You're not letting Joe Mixon stay out there very long. Joe Mixon's only going to get a few carries. Do you really need a Sed Pierman situation happening to Joe?
No, let me bring up a game. I don't know if you were here yet. No, it was Jeremy Hill's rookie year, 2014. It was the fourth preseason game. They ran Jeremy Hill out there till he literally got hurt at one point, and they shipped him back in to play a whole second half because they thought he needed to get what it feels like to play a full game and to toughen him up. It was one of the crazier things I've ever seen. It was the Colts' fourth preseason game at Paul Brown Stadium. I'll never forget it. He got hurt, went in, came back, and they shipped him back in for another 10 or so carries. It was one of the crazier things where they wanted to toughen the guy up and get him to feel like he had played. And now, in retrospect, maybe it's because they knew that they weren't going to play him a ton early in the season. Maybe they felt like they needed to get him in better shape. I don't know what it was, but there is a history, a recent precedent, of them not being afraid to put a pick out there at the running back position and let him go take some bumps.
Yeah. Well, a change there this year is they're not going to – they'll have 90 guys
In that last game.
So, you know, the Trey Carson running for 125 yards against the Colts is definitely on the table.
Yeah. It's really kind of a fascinating argument, and, you know, I don't know that we will know until they line it up against the Ravens.
Yeah.
Because they're going to clearly want to hold that close to the vest. I don't think you'll be able to judge anything by preseason rotations.
No.
Unless they come out and say Joe Mixon's the starter, which I doubt.
Yeah, because honestly, Paul, I think Jeremy's going to show well. Because he showed well last year in this spot. He's going to look good in camp. He's leaner. It's the same. I thought about it as I'm watching him because he does look good in shorts and T-shirts and all that stuff. He had a couple drops. Which again is an issue for him. But again, I think if Gio's not there, Joe Mixon's the guy to catch passes from Andy on third down. But I think he's gonna show well, just like last year, and he's gonna look good. You know what I mean? So I think there's gonna be that little bit where you're like, where the coaches are like, well, he gets the first drive against Baltimore, Joe Mixon gets the second drive.
Yeah.
Gio's not in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I guess really the question is, when does the hook come if the other two are doing what he's not? And I think the leash is probably shorter.
Yeah.
But I guess so part of me when you asked me to open the segment was at the end of the year, I think there's a part of me that thinks there's enough offensive line issues where they're all going to kind of look the same in a lot of ways and be like, well, Jeremy is not like as bad or whatever, so we'll still give him, you know, 12 carries and Gio gets 6 touches and Joe gets 5, you know what I mean?
I think they will so badly need someone who can make a guy miss in the backfield that maybe it puts Mixon above the rest pretty quickly.
Yeah.
All right. This is going to be a lot more on this, obviously, as we get closer, but we said before this that we don't know that we properly delved into this topic. I think we did.
Yeah.
I think we did.
It's 20, 25 minutes. It's going to be one of the more fascinating.
Outside of the offensive line, I think it's the most fascinating thing going to be about how this coaching staff, you know, what decisions they make.
Right.
And the development of the offensive line, how Paul Alexander does with those guys, and what they decide to do with this running back rotation is going to be super interesting. Let's go into some other OTA stuff and talk a little bit about that. CJ Uzomah's been out.
Yeah, it's you know, I know fans really love their Tyler Eifert side rehab field stints. We know that's what he's doing. CJ Uzomah, not quite sure why he hasn't been participating. He's been on the side field, and then he'll practice for a day, and then he's on the side field for a day. Not really sure what's up with him. So what does that mean? That means the other tight end, the other third-round pick from 3 years ago, outside of Paul Dawson, which is, again, looking like a total whiff.
Yeah.
Of epic proportions. I mean, he Carl Lawson was given the day off in the session we saw. So instead of Paul Dawson running with the second team as he had been, Jordan Evans was running with the second team.
Yep.
Marquise Flower. So whatever's going on there, not again good for the third round pick a few years ago. Vontaze Burfict light, not quite.
Yeah, no.
So that leaves Tyler Croft all the reps, and. Look, third year. We talked about this a little bit in the offseason. Big year for him and CJ Uzomah.
Yeah.
Tyler Eifert's in a contract year and is hurt all the time. So Tyler Croft has played a lot, but what hasn't he done? Caught passes from Andy Dalton.
Yep.
So he's been doing that a lot and actually had a really good day in the last OTA we could see. Caught a touchdown, a nice corner route that probably would have been a touchdown. He beat Evans on a nice route. And look, Andy Dalton told me, we'll bring in Tyler and then Andy here. But what I asked Andy was, is he open, or are you forcing things to him because you're as a quarterback trying to get a look, trying to make a throw you don't think you can? You know what I mean? Like, I wanted to find the context of him going to Tyler Croft in these situations because he was looking at 81 a lot, and Andy said no. He's like maybe I'll try to zip something in somewhere. But for the most part, he said, I'm throwing to what's open, to what the read is, to what the coaches want to see. So there's the context. Tyler Croft's open.
Yeah.
And Tyler Croft knows these reps are really important for him because he frankly hasn't caught a lot of passes in his first 2 years in the league.
Like, what has that been like, I guess, in this period, you know, year three, to be getting such work and such action. And
yeah, obviously it's unfortunate that like Ife and CJ, we have a lot of guys down right now. But yeah, it's been awesome really getting all these reps and really getting in on the same page with Andy and AJ and Jeff, like all the quarterbacks. So it's awesome getting a lot of experience and a lot of reps and just these 9-10 practices.
Right. Is it so things like, you know, getting in for a touchdown and some of that no huddle stuff and catching a pass? I mean, you've played NFL games, but what does that kind of do for you? Because, I mean, frankly, we haven't seen you catch a whole lot in game action, but to be getting out in the patterns and he's looking for you.
Yeah, that's what comes through when we're getting a lot of serious time together over these past weeks, and it's given him the confidence that I'll be on the right spot. Yeah, I'll be in the right spot, and that I know what I'm doing. So it's all about confidence that in each other, basically, that we're both on the same page. And
is that kind of one of the things that you feel you have left to show? Because I know in camp, the injury kind of took you away from a lot of that, and then you get into the rhythm of the season, and as we talk, a lot of times you were online. Is that kind of the one thing in year three you want to...
Yeah, oh, definitely. I want to show that I can do the stuff in the past game that I know I can do. And like you said, last year I thought I had some momentum going, and then I had the setback with the knee, and then came back relatively quickly with that. It was game time, ready to go, and just took a little bit to get back into it and get back going. But yeah, I'm just that's something I feel like I can show, and I'm hopefully showing it and continue to progress.
Is there, I guess now in year two with Ken's offense too, is that another? I mean, I know it's not a huge change from even your first year.
Yeah.
But again, are you seeing some things just come a little smoother, a little easier?
Yeah, definitely. Especially like you said, it wasn't a huge change from between the offense. Obviously, there's nuances and stuff going on that's different, but yeah, it's just things are clicking faster, and then you know what to look for. There's certain concepts that you might learn them, but then when you're out on the field, seeing things different, seeing from the coach's eyes.
I mean, it, what does he look like or feel like, at least for you? As he's kind of, you know, him and Ryan are kind of the two guys out there for you at that spot.
Yeah, he's, I think it's just he's not thinking as much anymore, and he just understands what we're doing and knows what he's doing. He can move around a little bit. He can play both tight end positions. And so, it's nice to have a guy that, especially when those other guys are down, and, that knows what he's doing, you can trust out there. And so it's good to see how comfortable he is in what we're asking him to do.
And he even said, he's like, that's kind of the one thing I have yet to show in his previous 2 years. He's like, because I came in and kind of had to block it.
Yeah.
And be online. Is that, I mean, I know you practice and you see him more than we do, but, I mean, has his pass catching or route running this little session with you been better or sharper?
No, it hasn't. I think his understanding of how to run certain routes has gotten a lot better, and I think that just comes with experience and time. And he's an athletic guy; he can run. And so, I think just the understanding of how to run certain routes and where exactly he needs to be has gotten a lot better. And I think that again is just getting comfortable.
You know, I go back to Croft's rookie year in training camp and seeing him make a couple of really nice plays as a receiver in the red zone, and you thought, okay, I see what they're talking about as how he's a good mix of a blocker and a receiver, and they don't need him to go out there and be Tyler Eifert, but they need him to be some kind of a reliable weapon,
right?
In that spot, what even if it is when he's just mostly a blocker, but he can slip out and actually make some plays, particularly in the red zone. And you're right. This is what we talked about when we talked about should they draft a tight end, when we debated O.J. Howard or any of those tons of tight ends to get on this draft, was is it time to, you know, cut bait on the current setup? And a lot of that is going to be on Tyler Croft's development, and so this is a good opportunity for him to prove what he can be. And he needs to be something or else he's going to be gone.
Right, and he said there too, he knows that those reps are going to come down once those other guys are healthy. But it's kind of make or break in a way. I mean, you know, and you need to look good at this point when you're 3 years in. So, yeah, you could say that on one hand he should be better. But we've seen players, as we started this conversation with the other third-round pick from that year, who's not getting any better and who's already been released once. So that's not a given. So the fact that Andy thinks he's better, that there is a connection there, and again, Paul, like you said – look, when Tyler Croft and when Ryan Hute was on the field last year together, you kind of knew what was coming. And then when CJ Uzama went out there last year, you kind of knew what was coming. And that really hamstrings you just as much as, you know, whether Eifert's hurt or not. I mean, when personnel pretty much telegraphs what's coming.
And how much have we heard them during the draft process talk about that being something that they wanted to eliminate?
Right.
Getting speed and versatility at positions so that they can be more, they can play more to Andy Dalton's strengths of finding the weaknesses and creating right. matchups. And that they don't want to be hamstrung that way. So you've got to get out there and prove you can do something else. And that's why, you know, I wonder, I mean, and we're kind of making it a given that he makes the team. And it probably is. I mean, they did draft a guy. They did in the seventh round. Yeah. They picked up Mason Schreck, and maybe he goes out there and outplays one of the two of those yeah. dudes and takes their spot. I mean, certainly if there's a guy out there that they expended a draft pick on, whether it was the last of all the picks or not, whether it was the seventh round and almost undrafted or not, that's a guy who they have some faith in.
Right.
And if they think he's pretty good and ascending – and maybe better than one of those two guys, and maybe they found a gem. We've certainly seen them not be afraid to cut a third or a fifth round pick if they right. think that that's the case.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Clayton Federalum last year as a seventh round
Absolutely.
Pick. All of a sudden was Paul Gunther's like, we need this guy on the field. He makes plays and almost broke Steve Smith's body in half. Like, yeah. So, yeah, you're right, Paul. I mean, if just because it's the last of 11 or the seventh round, that really doesn't mean anything. The fact he's a draft pick means something.
Yeah, absolutely. So, interesting to watch that. I mean, beyond that, you get into these OTAs, and it's, you know, the outside guys. I mean, Drake Kirkpatrick now is back.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, we can stop sounding the alarm on his hand.
Yeah.
He was back involved. Outside of that, I mean, there's not a whole lot. William Jackson III has been out there.
Yeah, that's been hard to say. I mean, it's you know, George Iloka was interesting. He's been a little more active in the backfield. He had an interception. Being a little more handsy around the ball coming in and basically said, Paul, he's funny. He's like, you know, we're in these install meetings and I'm sort of beyond install. He's like, I'm already remembering routes and combinations that were run against this install and what I can do there. And he's basically like, I need to be at 6 years in a more impactful player on the ball, which I think is interesting. And he said, look, I'm going to do this now because if it doesn't work, I'm not doing it Sunday. So I thought that was a really veteran and smart approach. And you guys have all heard George on this podcast and on BTS, that's just kind of the way he thinks. So that was interesting to kind of watch. You know, but other than that, it's, you know, Vontaze Burfict looks fast. Nick Vigil looks fast. Kevin Minter is definitely faster than the other former middle linebacker. So, you know, that speed is evident.
Seen this question a couple times on Twitter. Base nickel linebackers has been Tez and Minter?
No, base is Minter in the middle, Nick Vigil and Tez.
Base nickel.
Base Nicholas Vigil and
has been Vigil and Tez,
yeah.
Okay, so it hasn't been Minter.
No.
Which there was a thought out there that he would come in and maybe be, because I mean that's their base. Their base nickel is really their
base defense.
Is really their base defense. So that would mean you'd be seeing a lot of Nick Vigil.
Yeah. So that's been and while even the players, even Nick is trying to tell us, hey, they rotate and they have practices we don't see, but look, we see this. So, and the coaches know we see this, and that linebacker's been pretty set, Paul, with those three in base, true base, and Vigil and Tez together in first string nickel, with Josh Shaw inside, especially because Dre hasn't really been participating in 11-on-11s. And then this past Tuesday, Pat Sims didn't work out. He's in the building, but just he didn't practice in the voluntary session. So Andrew Billings was the first man up at D-tackle next to Geno Atkins. They quickly put Brandon Thompson in there as well for some first-team reps. I think to maybe quell any, like, Andrew's the guy.
Yes.
But Andrew was the first one up after Pat Sims, followed by Brandon Thompson.
Yeah, and I think there's expectations that there's a – I mean, if I were putting a money down right now, I'd say Andrew Billings will be starting next to Geno Atkins against Baltimore. If I had to pick, I mean, maybe Pat Sims for show.
Yeah.
Just because to give the start.
Right.
Too, but I think you're going to see. I mean, I just think they really believe in Andrew Billings. We'll see in the preseason, obviously, but
right.
That's interesting as well.
Yeah, so news-wise, that's kind of really, you know, the positional stuff is tough to really get into because we only see the one practice. And they do practice other days. But again, for what it's worth, Marvin Lewis knows we're watching.
Yeah.
And so those are the rotations they see, that we see. So offensively, you know, usual stuff.
Yeah.
As we said with Mixon, third team, no John Ross. You know, I think... you know, the receiver room that you know, we mentioned the running backs. I think the whole Alex Erickson being an odd man out after leading the league in kick returns is sort of an interesting scenario and what happens there. But yeah, it's kind of, you know what? No, number 18 didn't fall down and not get up. Number 14 didn't hit his hand on a helmet, and you know, no defensive players got a leg rolled.
Yeah.
So really the tackles, you know, I touched on this in the bootleg BBP. What I, you know what I mean?
Whatever.
I don't know. So it's I think through the OTA, Paul, the fact that, you know, you're just talking about some soft muscle issues. Brandon Wilson, the 6th-round pick's been out with a tweak left knee since the rookie mini camp. He hopes to be back for the mandatory mini camp. He's been in a jersey, but working on the side field. And I think that's an important distinction. He's not like not dressed.
Yeah.
But you know, nothing major, which I think for most of these teams is a good deal.
Can I completely pivot and change topics
yeah.
to something that I find just fascinating? The Jets are totally tanking, dude. this is like some NBA Sixers trust the process stuff happening with the Jets right now.
Except they have no prospects.
Right. Well, they do. It's Sam Darnold. I mean, they're trying to get the quarterback. They desperately want that.
What's Hugh Jackson thinking?
Have we ever seen an NFL team so blatantly decide to tank, which, by the way, like cutting your best players and calling Josh McCown a starter is a great way to tank.
Right. Especially like at the end of OTAs.
Right.
Like you've gone through all the voluntaries
Did you see it was right after the deadline for season ticket holders to make their payments? Then they
naturally.
Cut everybody? I mean, in case you just want people to be a little more skeptical of what you're doing.
Right.
Now, here's the question. And I, like I said, this is a complete random pivot because it's been on my mind watching this. This Jets thing is fascinating. I mean, if this was your team, if this were the Bengals, right, and this was 1998, and they haven't had a quarterback in forever,
right,
and they are just trash because of it, and you know there's no future, and you see that you know the next big thing is Andrew Luck. People think that Sam Darnold, whoever's going to be Andrew Luck, would you be okay with a season where they, let's say, they cut Vontaze Burfict and they cut A.J. Green or whatever.
It's
not A.J. Green, but you know what I mean.
They cut
some prominent players and they sent Jeff Driskel out as a starter. If they did that, would you be okay with that?
I think so, because you're bad to begin with. Someone was like, oh, the Jets are tanking. Didn't the Jets have a top 10 pick anyway? I mean, they were bad last year.
Yes.
So who are you?
They were bad and old.
Who are you really cutting? Yeah, you're cutting old guys.
Old guys.
And, you know, and I think keeping McCown around is probably fine because really, you know, you're going to put Bryce Petty out there with that. What are you going to know about him? He's going to get his brains beat in and you're not going to get a really good evaluation. So I guess that's the bad part there, you know. But Eric Decker, really? Like,
Eric
if he
Decker,
signs a ball
Harris,
to...
I mean, you know, quality...
Yeah, I mean, their names.
I hope Matt Forte didn't buy
right.
in New York.
I think the timing is more than shocking. If this all happened in, like, March and April, it'd be like, oh, okay. But I think the fact that you've already gone through all the workouts...
Interesting. The Jeremy Maclin cut also
happened
with Kansas City. The timing has been interesting because people are like, oh, isn't there a June 1st thing? Well, yes, but no. Yeah, they're cutting these guys. There is a June 1st... After June 1st, the salary cap, it cut you. Their hit can spread over 2 years. But you can cut a guy in March with a June 1st designation. You don't have to
wait
until after June 1st.
Right.
And so that really doesn't play here. And it's really odd. And so now we see something sort of like we saw with Josh Norman last year, where all of a sudden
way past free agency, and when everyone thought their teams were set, here's a couple of pieces sitting out there.
Yeah.
Jeremy Maclin and Harris and Decker now were teams that had holes that they didn't fill in the draft or wherever at receiver.
The guy's already getting hurt.
And to answer your questions, Bengals fan, no. No. How many receivers do you need?
Right.
They're already trying to
I didn't do that to you. Somebody asked me. They're like, should we send all the questions to Paul? I'm like, nah, it doesn't really fit.
Come on.
Doesn't fit.
How many receivers do they just drafted two more?
Right.
I mean, come on, people.
Right. So that one, no. Yeah, I didn't do that
to
you.
But anyway, it's been amazing to me. It's like, it's completely, like, did Sam Hinkie, like, did the Jets pick him up? What is going on over there? So it's really a crazy thing. Me as a fan, I'd be okay with it.
Yeah, because they're bad.
We had no answer at quarterback. They have no answer at quarterback. And you knew next year is an answer. You already know that. Screw it. Give it up. Give up.
Yeah.
Just go for the long-term future. Suck for luck, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same concept. I don't know what they're doing for Darnold. Whack Arnolds.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
The underrated, one of my favorite underrated Chappelle Show skits is Whack
Arnolds. Yeah, Whack Arnolds. What's Hugh thinking?
They're trying to take my quarterback.
Yeah, I was going to say.
We're going to have a suck-off. They do play each other. Browns versus Jets.
Oh, man. He was going to get, like, the number two pick and not get the QB he wants yet again.
So Browns.
Fired after another 4-12 season.
Oh, man. All right. Well, I think it's about time we get into some of our standard stuff here. And now it's – we're in kind of a close quarters here inside of this booth, so try not to get too animated. But why are you mad this week?
Yeah, it's I'm less passionate about this particular one, but it's kind of made me angry as a we're both fans of the NBA, Paul. And look, I kind of suffered through, like everybody else, with the playoffs in general. But I am a little mad about the way the marquee event has gone.
Really?
At the recording of this podcast. Yeah, it's just been – I mean, it's been beautiful basketball in a lot of ways. Because you're talking about some, you know, what, a handful of Hall of Famers and what, 7 All Stars. I mean, it's kind of unprecedented in a lot of, you know, on paper.
3 MVPs.
But yeah, 3 MVPs. Now I'm Team KD, man. I've loved Kevin Durant for years. I thought, you know, there were legitimate questions at times, like who is the best player in the NBA with LeBron James at times. So I'm kind of happy to see him actually rise up and not shrink away as we've seen him do in the finals, last year's Western Conference Finals. But I'm kind of mad at, like, I'm mad at the game. I'm mad at you know, hey, I shot 28% for the 3-point line, so now we're blown out by 20.
Yeah.
Like there's other, you know, and I don't know if it's coaching or if it's just reliant, like Klay Thompson. Like, I'm just going to keep shooting and shooting, even though I'm, you know, 6'10 and can maybe get some points inside, but I'm allergic to paint. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just kind of mad at some of that stuff where I don't feel like, at least as we're recording this podcast, we've seen excellent basketball from the two best teams. I'm not getting the payoff.
Excellent basketball from the Warriors?
Yeah, I'm nitpicking. Well, I mentioned Clay. I'm nitpicking a little bit. Obviously, yes, the team who wins looks good, right? But you haven't been pressed. So what happens then? You know what I mean? Like, I guess in total, two teams that had not – well, I mean, I guess the Cavs lost that one game to Boston. But essentially, two teams that hadn't lost at all since, you know, the start of the playoffs. I'm not getting what I had hoped to be getting at the beginning here.
Is that because the games haven't been close, or you feel like they haven't – you just feel like they haven't been pretty?
They've been pretty at times.
I feel like the Warriors brand of basketball has been exceptional to watch.
Yeah.
Because of the fact, I mean, the Cavs are doing everything, and they're not playing terrible. I mean, Kevin Love's out there making plays.
Right.
And Josh LeBron, I mean, he had a great
triple-double
in three quarters.
Yeah.
I mean, they are doing what they've done, but the Warriors are just so much better. And the fact, what you said, where three turnovers and a bad shot by the Cavs and you're down 20,
right,
that's what makes them incredible and so fun to watch, because that burst is always there and you can't recover from it. I feel like we're watching greatness, and just because the Cavs are nowhere near
right
to this point, I mean, we
is that
the,
their
the Cavs
fault?
May win by 30
right
tonight. We don't know.
Oh, which would just make this bad.
Yeah,
they do. Oh.
I just, because it's not close doesn't mean it hasn't been great. I love watching the greatness we're seeing from the Warriors.
Yeah,
I'm team 16-0. I want to see 1 year they set the record in the regular season, the next year they set the record in the postseason and get the title and have won two out of the last three and do it in a sweep, because I appreciate the greatness that we're seeing from
you. Yeah. Oh, no, definitely.
You got too much hate in your game.
Yeah.
Just because the games haven't been close. I don't think that means that we haven't been.
Does Klay Thompson know how to make a layup?
I don't care. He makes threes.
No, he does. He's not making threes either. I'm nitpicking.
Last game he did.
I'm nitpicking.
4-7 game two.
Yeah. 20 turnovers too. I'm just saying, it's just one of those things.
He's a fourth option.
I'm nitpicking, but it's just that's why I'm mad. Because I think at this point, as a consumer, as a fan of basketball, it hasn't been yet.
Yeah.
So maybe.
Maybe it will.
Yeah.
Maybe it will. You know why I'm happy? Science. Science is real. Because don't anybody tells you science is fake.
Tweet all your climate change questions to Paul Daner, at Paul Daner Jr.
Listen to the scientists. Science is amazing. I'm telling you, last Tuesday, I roll into a hospital, and I did faint. I faint when they struggle getting the IV in me. They like were digging around and screwing up, and I just like, boom. I just wake out. I wake up. I got a cold towel on me, and like they're holding me back. They got fans, just four nurses. This woman, God love everybody at UC Health is fantastic, except for this woman who struggled to get my IV in.
Yeah,
you pass out.
But I've had that happen.
But I go in. I mean, they put the anesthesia in me. Boom, I wake up, and they had my back open, and they had went in with a camera. They just moved through the muscles. They didn't have to cut anything, and then they pulled this disc out of my back that had been killing me, and next thing I knew, I wake up outpatient, and I walk out of the hospital. Basically, I was able to kind of gingerly get over to my little wheelchair and was able to walk into the house. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Outpatient back surgery. Now I'm not back surgery is the last thing I wanted to do. Trust me, but it is amazing. I mean, I'm 8 days as recorded, 8 days removed, and I came into the office. I didn't drive because I don't want to get Tiger Woods style because I'm on pills. But, you know, I'm able to walk around. I'm able to go do things. I'm sitting here with you this whole time. I'm able to stand. It is just ridiculous, the stuff that they can do. And through the analysis, through all the MRIs and everything, man, science is great. I really should have paid more attention in science classes because I'm just amazed by all this stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge – I mean, I've never really been into – I've never really had health problems. And the only stuff I ever really get into involving this is usually talking to players about their injuries.
Right, Tyler Eifert. Send all your Tyler Eifert rehab questions at
Paul
Daner
Jr. Me and
Eifert
are going to just sit and talk about facts. Which, I mean, you know, hey, that's cool. We got a whole new thing that we can talk about.
There you go.
Talk about our back surgeries. And so maybe I will be the Tyler Eifert rehab expert.
Yeah.
So be it. I'll take it. But I'm just, that's why I'm happy. Because hopefully, knocking on the podcast booth, on the road to some sort of recovery in the near future because of science. It's amazing.
Yeah.
What else we got? Anything on your mind?
No, man. I am going to push for my song this week, though. A, because I had to go find it, which was not easy. But it's applicable in a lot of ways. It is a hip-hop classic. I've gone hip-hop heavy. Since you've been gone.
Yeah.
But I'm going to push for this because, again.
I'm not anti, by the way, I don't want to come off as like the guy who doesn't like hip hop.
Yeah, I know.
Like, that's the last thing
I know.
I just, you know.
And this is all like 90s era hip hop, too. So I'm a little old school.
I'm cool
dating myself a little bit. But it's a GZA and Method Man, Shadow Boxing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You're a Wu-Tang guy.
Yeah.
That's your heart.
It's a classic. But, hey, because I thought it was. The reason I brought it up, Paul, is because I was talking about tackles last week on the Bootleg BBP. You can't. That's really all these guys are doing.
Yeah.
Is essentially shadow boxing.
Yeah.
And you and I are in this little booth with weird shadows across ourselves.
Yes.
And it's just kind of like I get that feel in here. I thought it was an applicable song. Also, I had to work real hard to dodge a lot of internet viruses to find this particular version of it.
This is going to make for terrible podcasting, but I'm literally going to take the selfie right now. This is going to be the BBP selfie of us. We're in the booth. There it is. That one will come up when we post this up. We'll get it on Twitter. So for those of you diehards that listen all the way to the last hour, you got to hear us take the selfie. I mean, that's really special.
Should have had the click on.
I didn't.
Yeah, sound effects. Like when you texted me in the booth with my read last week.
Screwed it up.
Yep.
Screwed it up again. Oh, well. Anyway, thanks to all y'all for listening. Next week, this promo a little bit for our schedule. So next week is, as we mentioned, the mandatory minicamp. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So we're gonna wait till the mini camp finishes so we can have all the information. Sort of an off-season program wrap, BBP for you. So it'll be later in the week, next week. I'll tweet that out as well, so everybody knows in case you didn't decide to stick around to the end. But keep that in mind. Next week, we will be coming a little bit later because we want to give you all of the wrap of the full three-day minicamp. All right, so let's get out of here. Wu-Tang? Wu-Tang forever?
That's right.
How's the Wu-Tang coffee table? Is it still
fantastic.
Perfect,
it's amazing.
Yeah, the Wu-Tang coffee table is just great.
Yeah.
In the shape of the W.
It is.
One of the best gifts that's ever been given.
Yes, without a doubt. My wife wins.
Yeah, you can't even give gifts anymore at this point.
She's
just always going to be second best.
Yes.
All right, so Wu-Tang is here, Shadow Box, and we're going to get out of the Shadow Box, and we'll talk to you next week after the Mandatory Minicamp. Have a good one.
Special technique of Shadow Box. I break it down to the bone gristle. Hell speaking, scud missile, heat seeking. Johnny Blazing, nightmares like Wes Craven. Niggas gunning, my third eye seen it coming before it happened. You know about them. Statin kids, they smashing everything, in any shape, form, or fashion. Now everybody talking about they blasting. Is you busting still or is you flashing? Talking out your asshole. You should have learned about the flowing PZ Afro. The Italian stallion, chinky eye and snot nose. From my naps to the bunion on my big toe. I keeps it moving. Know just what the f doing. Rap insomniac, fiend to catch a nigga snoozing. Slip the cardiac, arrest me. Exorcist hip hop, possess me. Crunch a nigga like a Netflix. You know my stage. Burning to a third degree. Sneaky ass alley cat, top pedigree. The head toucher. Industry party bum rusher. You don't like a nigga up in your picture. Right. Rap, fuck. Best to come back and check it.